This is the English Word Doctor writing as the new media curmudgeon, Series 2, 0303, for identification. This podcast series is sponsored by Mouse Calls of Bellevue 37221, professional IT for everyone, and we'll hear from them next. Mouse Calls announces its largest product launch in 22 years. 24/7/365 live support for all VIPs and managed clients. You already know that at Mouse Calls, we have worked for over 22 years to provide our clients with exceptional service experience. We love you, our clients. This is part of the why we have an NPS score of 92. Which is considered best in its class among technology solution providers. It's my absolute pleasure to announce that to you that by September 1st, we will be providing all VIPs and managed clients with 24/7/365 live support. That's right. A live human answering your calls and a direct-to-text service no matter what time of day or night. Our exclusive VIP email support is help247@mousecallsonline. And our phone number is the same as always, 844-541-6964, as well as 615-662-0235. This email is exclusive to our clients on VIP plans. Please don't give it out to friends or family. If you use support@mousecallsonline address, your request will get bundled with non-VIPs and you won't get the fast full service equipment. How can we celebrate AI in content creation when we can't field a safe, self-driving automobile? Aren't they two sides of the same coin? Is it artificial intelligence or merely bot creation through clever algorithmic management? It's just like the book I'm reading, Road to Nowhere. It tells me about the much-vaunted self-driving vehicles. If in the dim dark days of yesteryear, we'd say, fudge the data. Volkswagen did it with their diesel product. Program the onboard to computer. Volkswagen did it with its diesel product. Program the onboard computer to report compliance. Or, as I do when I engage Waze, I lie to a computer. I'm a passenger. Meanwhile, on the university front, a local school is celebrating AI with an online conference. I wish someone would explain the logic of this activity. If a student can engage in self-plagiarism, isn't using AI a definition of plagiarism? Plagiarize, to take the ideas, writings from another, and pass them off as one's own. Webster's New World, 2nd edition, 1984, page 1087. Yes, it's true, 500 monkeys banging away on typewriters would eventually produce every line Shakespeare ever wrote. But it would mean a lot of bananas before we see KJBYCX, The Quality of Mercy is Not Strained. And someone would have to read all that garbage, and the work ethics of monkeys is hard to fathom. Considering the state of news reporting these days, what makes you think AI is not already at work? Problema, there are no longer any editors. Newspapers can't afford them, and television pundits don't use them. Result? Mostly digital blather. Up until now, behind every story is a writer, and what we call AI is simply machine learning. To put it more simply, algorithmic management. Through the magic of pagination, we have become the new home of misinformation. I'm not talking about the fake news of 2020. It's the era of sloppy prose. It's a common practice in news writing these days. Fox News Weather calls the mouth of the Hudson River in New York City, Hudson's Bay. Last night, 0220, during an episode of the Smithsonian Channel, and here I quote, "The real story of Midway," end of quote, showing the silhouette of a supposed Japanese plane. It had bent wings, known as gull wings. Only two aircraft of World War II had gull wings. The Stuka dive bomber of the Luftwaffe and the Corsair, U.S., which had not yet come into service at the Battle of Midway. Heard on news radio WTN 0130, the 1 o'clock newscast, and here I quote again, "A new rail tunnel under the Potomac River in Baltimore is required to ease congestion," end of quote. No, it won't. The Potomac River does not touch Baltimore, Maryland. Yes, Baltimore indeed has a waterfront, the Inner Harbor. It's an arm of Chesapeake Bay, a somewhat larger body of water than the Potomac River. That river is an estuary 38 miles further south. There's always a need for editors. George Orwell wrote about IA before the idea was conceived, and here I quote, "There was a whole chain of separate departments dealing with proletarian literature, music, drama, and entertainment generally. Here were produced rubbishy newspapers containing nothing but sports, crime, and astrology, sensational five-cent novelettes, films oozing with sex, and sentimental songs which composed entirely by mechanical means on a kaleidoscope-type device known as a visonicator," end of quote. 1984, George Orwell, page 43, Signet edition. Winston Smith, the hero, worked for the Ministry of Truth. It was his job to do what woke writers are doing now: rewrite history to conform to modern sensibilities. I'm writing a novella set in the early 1940s, 20th century, and my style guide keeps changing waitress to server. Trust me, at that time there were waitresses. 1984 is the predecessor of a modern writing genre, a dystopian future. Orwell is more prescient, except in one regard. He didn't know we would cheerfully march into conformity while celebrating drivel as creativity. Because of the global warming nonsense, we have the notion that we're in charge. That's the real nonsense. How do I know media writes nonsense? Easy. I can remember this headline, and here I quote, "Wuhan virus is racist, and COVID-19 is not," end of quote. And we believed it. It was much more simple than that. Wuhan virus is 9 keystokes, and COVID-19 is 7. It was later reduced to COVID, all caps, 5 keystrokes. Lest you think I'm being pedantic, let me remind you that COVID continues to be a daily story since 2018. The other continuing New York Times semi-annual story is, and here I quote, "It's over for Apple," end of quote, which appears each February and September since 1979. Back in the dim, dark days of the past, the term was evergreen copy, or that story you trotted out when there was no news from East Palestine, Ohio. Another example of evergreen copy will be the obligatory stories about, and here I quote again, electricity vampires, end of quote, which occur at the change of seasons when your AC kicks in and customers experience sticker shock each spring. It's hard to know where to begin to my review of Road to Nowhere. So much of what passes for wisdom in this book is out of sync with reality. Or as Copernicus has expressed it, to know what we don't know is the beginning of wisdom, end of quote. In this case, the author knows so little it's hard to fathom. The first part of the book is a detailed description of how the rideshare became the first base of the gig economy from its inception in San Francisco. It then moved quickly into a detailed discussion of self-driving or autonomous vehicles. And I think he has the chronology wrong. The idea of the self-driving automobile predates Uber by at least a generation or more. It was a feature of the new world of tomorrow. Thank you, General Motors, and the New York World's Fair, 1939-41. In the main, it's a problem of perception. When you operate a vehicle, a human has a much wider scope of vision. FYI, I bought a new dash cam and it's 138 degrees vision. And compared to my normal vision, that's narrow. Another problem is too much diverse data. Just like the recent NORAD failure to discover the now famous Chinese balloon incident. And here I quote, "Too soft a target, Herr Mozart. NORAD is looking for missiles and aircraft. Fast moving, hard targets. To an autonomous vehicle, a pedestrian has the same problem. A slow-moving, soft target. Solution? Everyone should wear radar-reflective clothing. What's unique about today's self-driving vehicles? It's the concept of fudging facts. Nikola Tesla was a genius. Elon Musk, not so much, except that he thinks he's a reincarnation of Leonardo da Vinci. Everyone loves good old Leonardo. In addition to being an artist, i.e. The Last Supper and Mona Lisa, his futuristic designs made him famous. Problema. Most of his designs were unworkable. For example, he envisioned man-powered flight using a rowing machine. Man-powered flight had to wait for the invention of the bicycle and the vinyl envelope. Or a parachute with a wooden canopy, another non-starter. And so it is with Elon Musk's transportation ideas, such as a series of narrow tunnels under L.A., kind of like that Looney Tunes one-way tunnel proposed by our own Mayor Megan Barry. And he's still working on Spaceship One, a one-way trip to Mars. I take back my previous comments about Road to Nowhere. It's an entertaining tour of misguided digital transportation nonsense.
Hi, it's Lily Hudson with your healthy eating tip of the week. If you find that you've eaten a sufficient quantity of food and you still feel hungry, it might actually be that you need digestive enzymes. That's right, sad to say, but that's one of the things that we don't make as much of as we get a little bit older. So check in with a good nutritionist, a dietitian, or your doctor. See if your doctor can direct you to someone that can help you figure out what enzymes you need so that you can better gauge what is hunger and what is actually digestion. Find out more at slenderstrongandfit.com. This is Lily Hudson. See you next time.
More from the Road to Nowhere. I follow the advice of another podcaster who makes his living talking to authors. They pay him to review new releases, mostly business-related. It was after I met him I formulated podcasting rule one. Podcasting is the essence of niche marketing. I once asked him how he found time to read all that stuff. Answer, he reads enough to ask 5 questions. With a chatty guest, that can produce 40-plus minutes of a podcast. Of course, I do interviews myself, but I'm not skilled enough to podcast live. I always edit to produce the premium content. It's been that way with Road to Nowhere. Each time I picked up the story, I learned something new. Rush Limbaugh once remarked, and here I quote, "California is where the future happens first," end of quote. As far as transportation is concerned, we may be in more trouble than we imagine. The last part of Road to Nowhere tells the story of those nasty scooters and that other transportation menace, e-bikes. there's no mention of the Yellow Bike program. Before the scooters, our left coast cousins invented the semi-disposable two-wheeler. Sounds great, but just like those nasty scooters, they're more of a menace to pedestrians because they were intended to operate on sidewalks, not roadways, which is where bicycles belong. The Yellow Bikes were those balloon-tired monstrosities we call, and here I quote, fat tire bikes, end of quote. With no gears but a kickstand and a dorky basket hanging off the front. You took the bike from its stand, rode to your destination, put the bike back in a stand for the next user. It was solely pedal-powered and charging was not required. Like the Schwinn or J.C. Higgins of your childhood, there was a chain guard, but no flat tire kit. Bikes are wonderful. But there are three main problems with bicycles as transportation in America. First, our country is large, not like the Netherlands or even Belgium, which are both small and relatively flat. Second, there are two things you positively cannot do on a bicycle. Stay warm or stay dry. It's just like those modern e-bikes. Nervous riders are going places they shouldn't go without a backup plan. We need to remember it's like a wag once remarked, and here I quote again, the country tilted up and all the new loose nuts fell to one end, end of quote. In this case, it happened to be Silicon Valley, and if you could find it, it would be in California. This has been the New Media Commotion, Series 2, 03-03-4 Identification. Thank you.
I've got some.